Many, many people in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana could lose all or some of their federal food assistance benefits under a budget the U.S. House is considering. And some of the congressional districts packed with residents who stand to lose that support are represented by Republican lawmakers. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss potential cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, more commonly known as SNAP or food stamps, and the political implications of those cuts are Center on Budget and Policy Priorities Senior Policy Analyst Katie Berg and University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Political Science Stephen Voss. Welcome back to both of you.
Good to be here, Lucy.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Katie, how much are House Republicans trying to cut from the budget, and how could that affect SNAP, this benefit that many of us know as food stamps?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think before we dive into what may be happening in Congress, it's important to take a step back and discuss what SNAP is and who it helps. So SNAP currently helps more than 42 million people in low-income families afford groceries. That's about 1 in 8 people in the United States. So it really touches every corner of the country. If you just look at Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana, SNAP helped almost 2.6 million people put food on the table last year. And just to give you a sense of who those people are, more than two-thirds of SNAP participants are either kids, seniors, or people with disabilities. And we're talking about households that have very, very low incomes. Roughly 80% of these households have incomes at or below the federal poverty line. So unfortunately, SNAP has also been targeted for cuts in Congress, despite its importance in reducing food insecurity and helping struggling families put food on the table. And the budget resolution adopted by House Republicans a few weeks ago calls for the House Agriculture Committee to cut a minimum of $230 billion through 2034, which we expect would come mostly or entirely from SNAP. And just to put that in context, $230 billion over that period would be a more than 20% cut to the program.
What are the options for cutting that much from the program if SNAP is the program to absorb all those cuts?
Yeah, so it's, I think the important thing to emphasize is it's really mathematically impossible to cut SNAP by that amount or anything even close to it without taking food away from low-income families. So if we're talking about a cut of potentially 20% or more, the math really only leaves some combination of these three options. Lawmakers could cut the amount of the food benefit that families are receiving. So cut the average benefit, which is currently only $6.20 per person per day, even lower. Or they could cut people. So they could remove eligibility and take SNAP away altogether from some participants. And then the third option is lawmakers could take costs that the federal government currently pays and impose some of those costs on state budgets instead through some sort of matching or cost share requirement, which unfortunately would very likely result in cuts to either SNAP food benefits, eligibility restrictions, or both. So the bottom line here is cuts of these magnitudes would be very harmful to struggling families who are just trying to afford the basics.
Stephen, there are Republicans in the U.S. House who have lots of constituents who rely on programs like SNAP and Medicaid. I'm thinking of Congressman Hal Rogers and Congressman James Comer in Kentucky. What are the political implications for Republicans whose districts include lots of voters who receive these benefits?
Yeah. When you're a politically active person, you tend to think that most voters act the way politically active people do, which is learn about policy changes as they're taking place, get worked up either for or against them. A lot of voters, especially the sort of people who are swing voters, don't really engage with policy changes until the effects start being felt in their community. So, you know, in the short term, maybe the implications for those Republican legislators might be fairly minor, especially because advocacy groups for the poor tend to be small, tend not to have a lot of resources. Once the effects of food stamp cuts might start showing up in communities, though, where friends or family or people near you are feeling the pinch somehow, struggling, that would be when you might expect some political implications.
Well, and Stephen, Kentucky voters have overwhelmingly supported President Trump. Cutting the federal budget is certainly a priority of the Trump administration. Do you think that could help these members of Congress politically when it comes to tough votes that might hit people hard?
For sure, SNAP, food stamps, it's operated under a lot of negative stereotypes. It's one of the less popular programs, especially when people on the right end of the spectrum talk about domestic policy. The idea that people are taking vouchers, as it's perceived, I think, and buying steaks or sodas, you know, unhealthy food, that has been irksome, and that short term can help with maybe some conservative voters. That's there, the possibility that it helps rather than hurts for cutting food stamps. But once again, once effects start showing up in the community, even voters who tend to have an ideology pushing them one way, their practical or lived experience can push them another. If you don't mind, I'd like to make one other point. You know, in a lot of the country, food stamps is a public policy that we tend to think of as racialized. And one thing that encourages voters to feel negatively toward policies like that is the sense that it's a redistribution of wealth across racial lines. But Kentuckians don't necessarily have that same racialized view of many of these public policies. It's a state with a lot of poor white people. They may have known relatives or friends who collected food stamps or got help from government. In Kentucky, the sort of anti-domestic policy tone that we see in a lot of national rhetoric doesn't necessarily play quite as well here.
Hmm. We're talking about potential cuts to the federal SNAP program that provides food assistance for millions of families across the United States. Do you have questions or comments about the federal food stamps program or the cuts Congress might be considering? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Katie, you just mentioned one of the options that lawmakers might look at for saving money in the federal budget is shifting some of these costs for SNAP to state governments. Explain how that could work.
Yeah, so this is something that might seem, you know, relatively innocuous. You know, why should we care if it's the federal government paying versus the state government paying? And I think it's important to think about a couple of things, namely the potential scale of the added costs that states could be facing and the constraints on state budgets and how likely it may be that states can actually bear those costs. So SNAP food benefits have always been 100% federally funded, and they represent the vast majority of the program costs. States do have some skin in the game. They pay half the cost of administering the program, but they currently pay $0 for the food benefits that go to those low-income families. And those costs are pretty sizable. Again, we're talking about an average benefit of only about $6 per person per day, but it helps a lot of people. So SNAP benefit issuance in Ohio last year was almost $3.2 billion. In Kentucky, it was more than $1.1 billion. In Indiana, it was more than $1.4 billion. And while we don't yet know how a state match requirement or a cost share requirement for these currently 100% federally funded food costs could be imposed on states, or what percentage of those costs states may be required to pay, just to give an example, if you imagine a 10% cost share requirement, just to make the math easier, that means that Ohio's state budget would have been on the hook for nearly $320 million last year. And just to put that in context, that's roughly equivalent to the annual salary of almost 4,800 public school teachers in the state of Ohio. I think the other important thing to mention is states are required to balance their budgets every year. So imposing these added costs would force states to make some very painful trade-offs, especially since many states are already facing budget shortfalls. So they would really only have two options. They can pay the required cost share that Congress is imposing on them, which would require raising revenue or cutting other programs and services that people in their state rely on. Or if they can't or won't pay that required cost share, they would have to cut SNAP and take food away from low-income families. And these choices would only get worse during recessions. If states are required to pay a portion of those food benefit costs, that they would have additional need in a weak economy as more people are losing income and becoming eligible for SNAP. That would mean that states would need to be paying even more and finding even more state dollars to meet that additional need at the same time that their state revenues may be declining pretty precipitously. So states may not be in a position to actually meet that increased need. So those are why we are very concerned about Congress potentially heading down that path.
We're going to continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll hear how homelessness increased in Hamilton County in 2024 and a new resource for people at risk of losing their housing. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our discussion about potential cuts to the federal food assistance program known as SNAP or food stamps. My guests are Center on Budget and Policy Priorities Senior Policy Analyst Katie Berg and University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Political Science Stephen Voss. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Stephen, before the break, Katie was talking about how one option to reduce the federal budget commitment to SNAP would be to shift some of those costs to the state. What kind of political pressure could that then put on governors and state lawmakers if leaders in Congress decide to go that direction?
Yeah, Lucy, I want to underscore one of the things Katie said. I'm just repeating, but I think it bears repeating, which is that the states are much more limited in their ability to borrow money, to engage in deficit spending. So while the feds can keep borrowing money and pump money out for domestic programs like SNAP, the states generally don't have that level of flexibility. So, you know, we might not know what the direct effect would be of SNAP benefits partly being shifted to the states, because that might just be money coming from some other program that we value that's far away from SNAP, from food support. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't have an effect. It would be just another part of the state budget that would have to be balanced, and it would put pressures. And, you know, in one state, it might take money from prisons. In another state, it might take money from schools. In a third, it might take money from roads. You just wouldn't know what the effect of shifting SNAP to the states would be. If I may, though, I want to point out there's a reason why, unlike so many programs, SNAP tends to be focused at the national level. The history of that program is that it created a way for people who needed food, who were needy, to get at American agricultural products, to be able to buy the things that farmers were producing. That's why SNAP is in the Department of Agriculture. And so it's using a sort of private sector solution to the problem of poverty. People are able to use their SNAP benefits to go buy from stores in the private sector, which in turn have bought perhaps produce from farmers who are in the private sector. It's not a straight government delivery program.
Our colleague Howard Wilkinson, who's the senior political analyst here at WVXU, has written about Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana being what he calls taker states, that they receive more in federal funding from the federal government than they send to the federal government. For states like that, Stephen, do you think there could be political repercussions? Just, you know, I mean, all three states are led by Republican governors. There are very strong Republican majorities in all three state houses. But do you think there could be any friction there if that were to happen?
This is where the racialization.
I said the wrong thing. Kentucky certainly does not have a Republican governor. Kentucky is a Democratic governor, but all three state houses have strong Republican majorities.
This is where the racialization of policies kick in. I mean, yes, some states receive a lot of money from the feds, but it tends to be focused on African-Americans or Latinos, and the people who might be politically dominant in those states don't necessarily smile on that redirection of wealth. The fact that these domestic policies are not really so racialized in Kentucky, I think, means that the potential for political ramifications or consequences are higher here, that people will view the victims of the cuts as people like them in a way that's going to make it easier for raising sympathies with the people suffering the consequences of any policy change.
Katie, before the break, also, Stephen mentioned that for some in the Republican Party, SNAP can be an easy target because they talk about fraud or waste or people using their benefits on food that's not healthy or on excessive spending and that sort of thing. How much fraud and waste is there in the program? I mean, could that garner any cuts of these budget cuts that the Republican lawmakers are looking to make?
Yeah, I'm glad you have brought this up because this is a talking point that we're seeing not only being leveled at SNAP, but also at other programs like Medicaid and even Social Security. And I think the important thing to emphasize is that it's just not true. These are misleading arguments to try to create a false narrative as a pretext to justify cuts that are unpopular because they hurt people. I think it's important to emphasize in the SNAP context that when we're talking about potentially a 20% or more cut to the program, that means taking food away from low-income families. It's not about cracking down on fraud, which is relatively rare in SNAP to begin with, or improving program integrity. The math here just doesn't add up. Even if you could eliminate completely every overpayment in the SNAP program, the vast majority of which are actually due to unintentional mistakes by state eligibility workers and families and are not actually fraud, there still aren't enough overpayments to add up to anything close to $230 billion. I think it's just a bit of a red herring to focus on those sorts of arguments when we're talking about cuts potentially of this magnitude.
Well, and Katie, your research also argues it's not just people who would suffer under cuts of this magnitude, that those kinds of cuts would be bad for businesses too. Tell us how.
Yeah, that's a great point. So SNAP is not just important to the low-income households who need SNAP to help put food on the table and help them afford groceries. It's also important to the broader economy, particularly during recessions. That's because those food benefits are federal dollars that go directly to low-income households who spend those dollars at local grocery stores in their communities. So, particularly during tough economic times, that's a very effective and efficient economic stimulus that, as Stephen mentioned, support jobs throughout the food supply chain. So there are, more than 260,000 grocery stores and other businesses that accept SNAP benefits throughout the country. There are more than 20,000 of those stores in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. And in particularly in rural areas, the SNAP benefits that families are redeeming at those stores may be the difference between those stores being able to stay open and serve the community, versus being forced to close up shop and go out of business.
Stephen, could business groups lobby Republican members of Congress more effectively to try to contain these cuts? I mean, people, years ago used to think of the Republican Party as kind of the business party or the party that was more attuned towards business needs.
Yeah, I think to a degree, you might see a little of that. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, with poor people who tend not to have as loud a voice in the activist space or the interest group space, the sorts of businesses that Katie was just talking about, the smaller grocery chains that serve these communities, they don't necessarily have a ton of political clout either. But I wouldn't rule it out.
Katie, what work requirements does the SNAP program currently have, and are there ways those could change under these proposals being discussed?
Yeah, so SNAP has a existing harsh work requirement. Currently, most adults between the ages of 18 and 54 who don't have children in their household can only receive food benefits through SNAP for 3 months in any 3-year period, unless they can sufficiently document that they're working at least 20 hours per week or prove that they should qualify for one of the exemptions. So, for example, they have a disability. Now, research has repeatedly shown that this requirement does not actually increase employment or earnings. It just takes food away from people and leaves them worse off. And because it creates a lot of additional red tape, even people who are working or who should be exempt can get cut off of the program and lose the food assistance that they need if they can't jump through all of the paperwork hoops. So we have seen some proposals from key Republican lawmakers to expand this very punitive requirement even further to cover more people. Some of the proposals would include applying it to even older adults up to the age of 65, many of whom, face more work-limiting health conditions and age-related employment discrimination. We've seen proposals to expand it to parents and grandparents of school-age kids, which unfortunately means that kids would lose some amount of food assistance if they're if the adults that they live with are removed from the program for failing to comply with the requirement. We've seen proposals to expand it to populations who are currently exempt from the requirement. So veterans, people experiencing homelessness, and young people who have aged out of foster care, and even to people who live in areas where there just aren't enough jobs. I think the important thing to note here is the Congressional Budget Office, which is Congress's nonpartisan budget scorekeeper, actually looked at all of those policies a few years ago and estimated that that would cut between 3 and 3.5 million people off of SNAP in a typical month, but it still wouldn't come anywhere close to that $230 billion target that the House Agriculture Committee has been assigned in the budget resolution.
Stephen, are work requirements more politically popular or politically palatable? Katie just made the case for why they can be very harsh for some people, some families, but overall, what's the political reaction to increased work requirements?
Yeah, the problem for policy advocates trying to protect things like SNAP is that on its face, philosophically, the idea of asking people to pitch in, to do some work for the benefits they get is popular. It's just, it fits with the American political culture to say, if you're going to get help from us and you're able-bodied, you need to do things. The problem with that philosophical stance is then we need the jobs for those people to be able to work in order to earn the benefits they get, to be able to contribute to buying their food or their housing or the like. And we're not so good at making sure the job market actually provides the work for people. We went through this with welfare reform back in the 90s into the 2000s. We cut people's welfare. We didn't do anything about making sure then the jobs were there for them. And while some people went and found work, others descended into much harsher poverty.
Katie, what are you going to be watching for as these budget negotiations continue? Do you think we'll know more by Friday how all these proposed cuts could shake out?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm not sure I can speculate on the timeline, especially because Congress has some other important business around funding the government and keeping the lights on with a funding deadline coming up on Friday. But I do think that some of the things that I'll be looking out for is, you know, while both the House and Senate have now adopted budget resolutions that call for some amount of cuts, the two chambers have taken pretty different approaches, and they still need to reach agreement both on kind of the size of the cuts they're seeking and what specific policies they'll be using to enact those cuts. So we're in a period of some amount of uncertainty about how deep and devastating these cuts could potentially be, as well as how specifically that those cuts could be made.
Well, I've been talking with Center on Budget and Policy Priorities Senior Policy Analyst Katie Berg and University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Political Science Stephen Voss. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thanks for having us.
Up next, we'll discuss how homelessness has increased in Hamilton County in 2024 and hear about a new resource for people at risk of losing their housing. This is Cincinnati Edition.